We return now to Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz with your hosts, Bill Holfeld and Joe Maniscalco.
And we're back with more good talk right here on Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz. I'm your host, Bill Holfeld. In the studio with me is my co-host and my partner, Joe Maniscalco. Joe, that was pretty good. I mean, Larry's take on that. I'm not sure if I agreed with everything Larry had to say, but, you know, it was clear and articulate. And I agree with the root or the kernel of it, with that there's a very definite divide and conquer strategy that's going on. And racism has certainly always been one of the tactics that's been very successful in dividing workers.
And the playbook is as old as the hills. It's time we all get hip to it. They use racism, whatever party you're affiliated with, the 1% billionaire class uses racism to divide the working class.
Yeah, we call it the Willie Horton syndrome, right? Willie Horton syndrome. All right, but moving on. We're moving somewhat away from the actual issue of racism into the...
To another way that they're attacking.
To another way of being attacked, exactly. We're going to talk about the Janus case now, are we not?
Yeah, and we were lucky enough that we had our East reporter, Steve Wishney, was down there in D.C. to hear the opening arguments. So, Steve, welcome to the studio. Glad to have you.
Steve, nice to have you back in the studio again.
Thanks a lot. Nice to be back.
Okay. And we're also joined again by famed labor organizer Phil Cohen, author of The Jackson Project, and he's going to help us put some of this stuff in context, historically speaking.
Hey, Bill, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you. Good to be here again.
All right. Well, let's start off with Steve. Steve, tell us just in general. Now, I know you were down in D.C. yesterday, so tell us in general, what was the vibe in the air? How is this looking for working people?
Well, you might say that the chances of the court ruling in favor of the unions are probably like the Knicks have not yet been mathematically eliminated from winning the NBA title right now.
That's bad.
There's a 4-4 deadlock last time around on virtually the identical arguments, and Scalia died, made it 4-4, and now he's been replaced by Neil Gorsuch, who's likely to be an anti-labor vote. Justice Anthony Kennedy, who's the swing vote, seemed openly antagonistic to the union arguments. He was saying things like, this is about, being compelled to support a political organization, and the public isn't the public union agenda.
So to put the atmosphere in a word, it sounds glum.
Yeah. I mean, outside, there are sort of two competing rallies. There are about 500 people from unions and about 100 people supporting Janus, who are pretty obviously AstroTurf. They all seemed either from State Policy Network or from Americans for Prosperity.
And Mark Janus was there himself, right?
Yeah.
Steve? I think we have a clip of Mark Janus actually talking about his case.
Oh, this should be good.
The fundamental issue is my right to choice. The fundamental issue is that with my very first paycheck, I had a fee come out of my paycheck, and I had to pay the fee. Nobody asked me. I wasn't given the opportunity to say yes. Which also is ultimately the ability to say no. And because I haven't had that choice, that's what I'm fighting for. And that's what this whole case is about.
Well, people on that side of the argument always gloss over the real issue that in a democratic society, people vote on this. There's a lot of things that my country does. There's a lot of things I get taxed for that I don't particularly care for. But you know what? Elected representatives pass that into law, and now I have to pay for it.
Bill, let's bring in Phil. Phil, what did you think of Mark Janus?
Okay, look, I'm going to take it to the bigger issue that Janus was addressing, because this is a very well-worn issue of the whole right-to-work argument. The thing that is overlooked by most people, and deliberately so by people on the right-to-work bandwagon like Janus, is it's not a question simply of whether workers have a right to join the union. It's the fact that unions are obligated under the right-to-work laws to represent those who are not members. And that's the real split here. That's the overlooked part of this. For example, in the Netherlands, at least a while back when I knew a union rep from there, people had an opportunity to join the union or not join, but only members were entitled to union representation.
That might be a better system.
And the thing that's really interesting about this, if you take a step back, I mean, unions, you know, to people like myself and you, and in the deepest sense of the word, they're a cause. But we also provide a service, which is representation. Imagine if there was a right to eat law in a state where restaurants had to serve everybody who came in, but then they had a choice whether to pay for the meal. Now, what would the quality of food be in those restaurants, or how many restaurants would stay in business? Imagine a right-to-ride bus system where everybody could ride the bus, but you chose whether to pay the fare. What would be the condition of the buses in that bus system after 10 years? This is unions in the right-to-work states in the United States provide the only service within the world where people have a choice whether or not they pay for that service. And the whole point of that has absolutely nothing to do with democracy or free choice. It has to do, comes back to what you said before, divide and conquer. And the entire intent is to weaken unions.
Well, Steve, now again, you're just down there yesterday. I mean, did the people seem angry? Did they seem enthused? Did they seem educated? I mean, you know, what was going on in the crowd?
I think people are angry, but they say this is an between the atmosphere in D.C. and the atmosphere at the rally here on February 24th, I think unions realize that they just have to organize a lot more intensely. This is an obstacle coming up. Let's hear from Steve.
Let's hear from Sean Francois from the School Workers Union, and he talks about this.
I see you're wearing a shirt that says, if you stay ready, you won't have to get ready. So what kind of things are you doing to get ready for this possible decision?
Well, the thing about it, like you just said, if you stay ready, you don't got to get ready. So I'm not getting ready. I'm already ready. So I'm ready to make it happen. I'm ready to show justice. I'm ready to make people understand that we fought long and hard to get where we are today. It seems like we're going backwards. This is not the time to go backwards. This is the time to go forward and do the things that we fought for, our forefathers fought for, people died for. This is a justice move. This is a move to let people know that righteousness is needed, and we need to get the job done and take it back to the streets, grassroots, and make sure that we get the work done.
What kind of things are you doing specifically to keep members engaged, keep people who might not be members involved?
Well, it's all about education. You got to keep the education in the mind of the members educated. Let them know and energize them the history of where they came from. If they don't know the history where they're coming from, you don't know where you're going. So you got to make sure that they know the history, what happened in history, to make the history not in vain, to keep it going the way it's supposed to be going, and make equality, justice, and the righteous for freedom the way it's supposed to be. It's about freedom. It's all about freedom. And that's what it's about.
Well, Bill, I think that's a very important point when he talks about history, and people actually died for unions.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And you know that's my love, Joe. And you know, we were just talking earlier before the program about how so much of what's going on in Spectrum right now is just a reworking of what's going on in the Homestead Act. And then these laws today are a reworking of the old Conspiracy Act. So history repeats itself. But what was Steve, the guy that you just interviewed, what was his name?
Sean Francois.
Sean Francois.
Tell him to go decaf.
It's a rally. He's fired up. I got to say one thing. I think it's individual freedom versus collective freedom, and that unions can give people collective freedom that if you don't have, the only freedom you have is to not let the door hit you on the ass on the way out. I'm going to tell a story about my mother, who's like a 70s women's liberation success story. She went back to school after like my little brother was in first grade. Got her PhD when she was 47, became an adjunct professor. After 3 years, she gets a full-time job, and she finds out that this guy who's half her age, straight out of Harvard, is making more money than she is. So she and a bunch of other women filed a class action suit and got equal pay. There's actually a family legend where it's more R-rated.
Well, she must not have been working in a union.
She was in a union job, and she said, if I was not in a union job, I would have been fired the minute I opened my mouth.
Oh. Phil, what's your take on labor's ability to weather the storm and survive Janus should the verdict go against them?
Okay, look, in a general sense, hardcore union people are amongst the most resilient, tenacious people on this planet. And one way or another, we've always survived and adapted, and we'll do the same thing. But to get more specific, there's another divide being exploited by employers beyond the racial issue, and that's a generation divide. You know, in the campaign I'm running now against an employer-sponsored desert petition at Mohawk Industries in Eden, North Carolina, which we're expecting a favorable decision on from the board within a matter of days in terms of dismissing the petition, the majority of people who were actually sucked into this employer-sponsored petition were new hires, people who had been there 2-3 years, millennial generation, that really don't have the experience, that were not part of the struggle of, you know, people, you know, in their 50s, 60s, who really lived and breathed the struggle for the rights that unions give working people. There's a whole just sort of lack of awareness in the younger generation of even understanding what unions are about.
There you go, Bill. There's another tool that we're hearing about now. We just heard about the racism tool. Now we hear about the generational tool that they're using to divide working people.
Joe, you know, that generation, color, age, religion. I mean, you want to see a great movie? I tell this to people all the time. You want to see a great movie about how that gets overcome? You go see the movie Meituan. That's my plug for that film. So Steve, just to wrap it up in a minute we got left, where do you see this thing going now? We got about a minute left before the segment ends.
I'd bet that, you know, the court's going to rule against unions, and then unions are just going to have to try to organize, and they're going to lose some and win some. But people I talked to at the rally in New York, all the big New York State public sector unions, CSCA, United Federation of Teachers, DC 37, they're all doing pretty intense internal organization campaigns.
Okay, well, then I guess we're going to have to leave it at that. No, we're going to, Joe, I guess we're going to have to hold our breath a little bit until we, you know, until all the votes are in. We're going to see what happens. But and we'll follow up on this, Steve. I know you'll continue to write on this. And Bill, you'll come back and tell us more about what's going on down at Mohawk. And thanks again for being here. And for now, though, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back in just a little bit with some more good talk right here on Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz at AM 970, The Answer.
You're listening to Labor Press on AM 970, The Answer.